Hello, good morning, if it's the morning. I just realized it's a podcast, and once again, I've messed up the intro. Hello. So today, I'm talking to Ben and Nikki from Our Happy Divorce. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing, as well as can be expected. Once again, I haven't written a script, so, bad start. But what's going on with you?
We didn't write a script either.
No, we didn't have a script either. We're just sitting, ex-husband and ex-wife sitting next to each other doing a podcast, just like every other normal day, right?
And how's that going for you?
It's going great. We actually, I wouldn't even say tolerate each other. We actually kind of like each other.
Oh, that's good. Tension. Yeah.
Kidding.
So what is Our Happy Divorce?
Well, Our Happy Divorce is a book that Nikki and I wrote about 2 years ago, sort of chronicling just our human experience and how we 14 years ago went from, I think every sort of divorce or end of a marriage happens, and sort of a petri dish of hell, and somehow we turned it into a happy divorce 14 years later, and we decided to write a book and share our experience. We're not doctors, lawyers, or therapists, but we just want to sell people our hope that it doesn't have to be the worst thing that ever happened to you.
So or was it? Yeah, I think that's an important thing, and we can touch on that. Was it all smooth sailing, or did it become more sort of happier and tolerable over time?
It was definitely not smooth sailing. I think it started off as any divorce would, and it was dropping the kids off, not looking at each other, barely wanting to speak to each other, only speaking what it had to do with the child. And I think that, we soon realized, and I think Ben's past experiences with his own divorce made us realize that we were going to do nothing but hurt our child. So this, what we have today, which is probably for most divorced couples, probably unheard of. And, people will look at us and be like, yeah, well, we could never have that. I mean, which you can, it does take time, but we live seven houses down from each other. We go on trips together. With our spouses, we've gone on trips without our spouses and our child. And, we eat dinner together. We celebrate holidays together. And we've realized that it just makes for a much happier child. And Ben has two other children since our divorce. And, it makes their life happier.
Yeah, and I think that the important thing is as we talk about the story and the ridiculousness of it that it might sound to some people, is we didn't make a decision to get divorced and then all of a sudden we were best friends and all that. There was many years of what we refer to, and it's not a clinical term, but we faked until we made it. And we made a decision to truly put our child first. And that for that, what that looked like for us was, if it was a school event or a sporting event that our son Asher had, is we sat next to each other. So he didn't have to have that experience I had as a kid with a high conflict divorce of walking over to your parents and trying to remember who you went over to and said hi to first, or who you, so you didn't slight, the other parent. And so that's how it started. And we put on our big boy pants and we put on our, fake smiles and tried to show Asher like this was okay. This is normal. And then somewhere along the line, and I can't tell you, and I don't think Nikki can either, it turned into not faking it anymore and having a true, authentic, real relationship and friendship.
So what, I hadn't really thought about the sort of political side of things for the kids, and their sort of alliances with one parent over the other. So when you when you got divorced, or we can speak more generally if you like, when parents get divorced, how much strain do you think it is on the child to sort of make it, sort of, do they feel a responsibility to not give more love to one or the other?
Well, I think, and I can speak from my experience, excuse me, as a, you know, someone who grew up in a super high conflict divorce situation. And I don't, for me, it wasn't about alliance. It wasn't about loving one parent over the other, despite maybe what the parents were trying to do. You know, and that was parent from a perspective of trying to get parent of the year, or I'm sorry, favorite parent, not parent of the year. But the way I sort of operated around that was to not rock the boat and to put my feelings and my truth aside, so I didn't upset my parents, either one of them. And that's a terrible situation to grow up in. You know, my parents, when they told us they got or they were getting divorced, we sort of sat around the kitchen table, me and my brothers and my sister, and mom and dad are getting divorced, and that was it. You know, there was the event, and then on with our lives, and there was no space given to us to express our feelings or to speak our truth. And that creates a really bad situation. So I don't know if it was political and trying to, you know, to pick a favorite parent, but it was just trying, from that point on, it was trying to not hurt the other parent or either parent more. Because if I did express my truth, it was met with, well, you have no idea what your dad did, or you have no idea what your mom did, and put right in the middle of something that no kid should be in the middle of.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think too, even, you know, even though in the beginning we tried to like fake it till we made it per se, like you could even see, like I was able to see the angst on Asher's face, even if we were sitting together at one of his events. It's, you know, of looking at both of us and saying, you know, like in his heart, like going, oh God, but if I touch my mom first, my dad's going to be upset. If I go to dad first, my mom's going to be heartbroken. You know, even from a young age, you could see that fright on their face. Like, you know, so we always tried to make it like, okay, you know what? We're sitting next to each other. You could just come to both of us. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like you needed to pick and choose between each one of the parents. Cause I think that makes life hard on a child. And it's like, it's just added anxiety that they don't need.
Yeah, hugely. I mean, they've got enough to worry about without right. having to worry about if things mm-hmm. are their fault or if things that they're doing make other people feel bad. Yeah, that's really... So when... how did you break it to the kids when you were going to get a divorce?
Well, we... Go ahead. He sort of forced it.
He did sort of force it. That's true. We had sort of, you know, split up, and like Ben had moved out for until we could figure out what exactly was going on. And I would always kind of like try to mess up the bed to look like his dad was still there, and Ben would come back in the morning, because he would leave at night, you know, and do the whole like, you know, faking that dad was still living there. And so Asher comes into my room one morning and he looks at the bed and he says to me, "Hey mom, where did dad sleep last night?" I mean, I thought I did a really good job of making it look like I was not the only person sleeping in that bed. And I was like, oh boy. Okay. Well, this child is definitely smarter than I'm giving him credit to. So, I mean, I think we realized at that point that it was our turn to really sit down and have a conversation with him. And, you know, I mean, but he was very young. He was 3 and a half. So it was, you know, we had to be careful how we chose, like what words we chose to, you know, tell him that we were getting a divorce, because it's not exactly something that kids at that age really understand.
Yeah. So just sort of skip a little further down the line. When you started to date or look at for new partners, did the ex-husband, wife on the other side get a voice in the matter? Sort of someone you're bringing into the small community?
Well, it's very interesting you ask that question. Well, and we've
get a voice in which way?
Well, so the Nikki, you know, I was 30 something years old, and I was you know, sort of going to go out and you know, sort of do the things that I had.
Do what dudes do when they get divorced.
Right. And you know, that was date. And so Nikki called me one day and she said, you know, just I'm going to ask you to not bring, you know, anybody around Asher until you're serious about him. And my first sort of instinct reaction was, who the hell are you to tell me who I can and can't bring around my son? I didn't say that. I did think it. But then I stopped for a second and, you know, she was right. And when I removed the ego from it, and did what was truly best for Asher, the response was, she was right. And so I told her, you know, I made her that commitment, that I wouldn't bring a revolving door of women, in and then out of Asher's life, mm-hmm. because he's already gone through a very traumatic experience. So my wife, I think it was about 9 months that we were dating before, I introduced her to Asher and kept Nikki and let Nikki know, when that was going to happen and how it was going to happen, because she was part of it. And the other thing is, you know, when we sat down on this path of truly putting our son first, you know, I don't know if it was implied, or we actually had a discussion, but I know one thing for sure is our partners, our spouses would not be in our lives today if they didn't truly buy in and understand what we were trying to do, and what we're trying to accomplish with Asher. And so they too have a tremendous role in this life, because they've also had to put their ego aside, and you know, understand. And for a long time, they probably had to fake it until they made it too with the relationship. But both of them are truly committed to, you know, what we're doing.
So Nikki, when Ben brought home brought over to yours, his new partner, how did that conversation go with your son?
Here's a funny story. This is how it was. So I knew that he was going to introduce them, and they, you know, they had been hanging out. And so whenever Asher would spend the night at Ben's house and he wasn't with me, I would call him at night and say goodnight to him. So one night I called him and I said, I was, you know, just talking to him, saying goodnight to him, you know, and I was getting ready to hang up and I was like, you know, I love you. And he said, hey, mom. I said, yeah. And at this time he's like 4 and a half. I said, yes. And he said, do you know Nadia? And I said, I don't know Nadia, but I know who Nadia is. And he said, well, I think you should talk to her. And he handed her the phone. And so, I mean, I always say, I'm like, I wish there was a camera in the room that I was sitting in, if someone could have seen my face. But this was this like 4 and a half year old boy's way of saying, hey, mom,
it's done.
It's time. Like, here's a girl that I'm hanging out with. Dad's hanging out with her. I don't ever see you hanging out with us, but she's in my life, so she should be in yours too. Mm-hmm. But that was his little way of just saying, hey, mom, it's time.
Well, I was lucky enough to have I didn't get to see Nikki's reaction, but I did get to see Nadia's reaction when Asher handed her the phone. And I will never forget that as long as I live. to say she turned white would be an understatement.
Yeah, it's funny how sort of switched on kids are to their own emotions. There's no ego in front of it.
Right. No.
This is happening now.
Yeah.
This is
it's time, mom. He's like, whether you're ready or not, it's time.
And you know, even from when he asked Nikki about where daddy slept last night to, you know, understanding and being in touch with the connection with Nadia and her meeting Nikki, we were guilty of it too. I know my parents were of not giving kids enough credit for how smart and aware they truly are, whether it's, you know, 3, 4, 13, whatever the age is. And Asher was very in tune with what went on. He was the catalyst behind Nikki and Nadia meeting, because after that it was like, okay, I guess it's time. And so, you know, it just reminded us that although we thought we were sort of outthinking him or, you know, keeping stuff from him, kids are a lot smarter than we give them credit for. Mm-hmm. At least ours is.
Yeah. And so when Asher, let's say he's at school and his, I don't know, kids are asking, hey, can I come and have a sleepover? Was it automatically arranged where that would happen, or was it like a, you know, scheduled thing?
Well, we, you know, a lot of the, with custody, and there's certain days and certain holidays, and we don't really do that.
We do a lot of, like, the big holidays, we try to switch off, because Ben's family doesn't live here, live where we live. So it's easy. So we try to, like, I try to accommodate.
Right. So, I mean, like, for example, like odd years, we could do Thanksgiving with me, even years. But so the big holidays we have set. But as far as custody and whose house he's at, we sit down every month, or Nikki, you know, goes through the calendar and splits it up, you know, equally 50% of the time at my house and 50% of her time. She asked me when I'm traveling. So there's not, you know, in the environment I grew up, if my dad missed a day or a weekend, too bad, right? Was the answer I'm sure he got from my mom.
Probably wasn't that nice.
Wasn't that nice, right. But in our situation, we know how important it is, although it still hurts, right? It's still, you know, you don't want to be without your son. If Nikki's traveling, she arranges the schedule to, you know, to make it fair, and vice versa. So it's not, again, we don't use our son as a weapon to get back and hurt the other person. Right. So a sleepover, you know, if he's at my house, his friends come over and they all sleep on the couch in the living room. And if Nikki's, so it's, you know, it's not anything that's, you know, prearranged as far as schedule, except for it is completely equitable and fair 50-50.
And I think something that's important is the fact that, you know, when he was younger, we tried to have, like, you know, the schedule where it was a week here and a week there and a week, you know, and he really, you know, and we tried to be those parents that would listen to him and let him speak and let him, you know, I never wanted him to feel how Ben felt when he was younger and, like, had no place to, you know, talk about his feelings and, you know, have someone understand how hurt he was and what he was going through. So, I mean, he came to us one day when he was really young and he said, hey, you know what? 7 days is too long. I don't like being without mom or being without dad for 7 days. So we were like, okay, we'll figure this out. So, you know, we tried 5 and it's still a little too long. So we tried 4 and then we ended up with 3 for like 3 days here and 3 days there. And so we were like, we did that for a while just because that's what made him comfortable.
And excuse me. And I guess it's a lot more convenient that he lives so close.
It is.
This is true. Does and the other thing is, you know, to tag onto what Nikki said, you know, there's been times where he's expressed that he wanted to stay an extra day at mom's because, you know, him and Chad or him and Nikki were going to go do something or had something planned, or he just wanted to. And there's not, although, you know, I'd be lying and it would be inauthentic for me to say that doesn't hurt still. Right. But again, it's not about me. And I'm just so proud, I guess you could say, that we've given our son that space to express his truth and not met with, oh, what, you don't love me? You love her more? Or, right. Or, you know, or whatever kind of nonsense that I would get that would just sort of shut down that truth.
Yeah.
Or my experience. So, you know, he has that freedom because we, from the day one, we've given him that space, you know, and you know, put him in therapy. just so he could speak with somebody and learn how to get in touch with these feelings that, you know, I didn't know how to deal with when I was a kid. That sort of the way I dealt with it was I internalized it to make it seem that I was the bad person, that I was bad. There was something wrong with me. And so along the way from 4 to you know, 18, he's had that room to you know, express to us, you know, what he wants. And it's not about us. Although, you know, again, I'd be lying to you here to say that sometimes it doesn't hurt, the ego, you know, that he wants to stay another or he wants to go away with Chad fishing. Chad's Nikki's husband. But again, it's not about us. He didn't choose for us to get married or have him or get divorced. And so, you know, we try to put on our big boy pants and truly do what's best for him.
I think that's really admirable, that you're doing something that you've experienced, a similar situation, but you've decided to consciously make it a better, environment for your kids and for each other as well. Like as a generation moves on, and I think that's up to us as parents to sort of look within us and look at the person that we decide to spend our time with and make things better for everybody involved.
And learn from, you know, our so-called human experience. But I do have to point out, and this should anybody who's been through a divorce should, you know, can understand this and relate to it. Even as hard as it was for me growing up with my parents' divorce, and not just from the day they told us they were getting divorced, but all the way through, you know, my adult life, living that experience and living that trauma and living that pain. When I left Nikki, or we decided to break up, I was so filled with these negative emotions and hurt and pain and anger. And I was so blind to that experience that I had that I, you know, we were headed down that same path. Mm-hmm. And so that shows you the power, at least shows me the power of divorce. And the emotional side of it. And if the emotional side of it is not dealt with, that I was still going to take my son and put him on my back and take him down the same path that I went down as a kid because of undealt with emotions.
Yeah. And I think sort of as humans, you know, we're born as a blank slate and these are learned behaviors. We learn from what we see our parents doing because they're the people who we assume know what they are up to. As soon as we become parents, we realize they had no clue. and we're like, I don't know how to be an adult.
Right. No one was there to teach us that.
Yeah. So, I mean, as a dad, I'm often telling my daughter, which is probably not the greatest thing to say, is like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing.
No.
This, like, being a dad is hard. And so I think it's really important that you saw your learned behavior, whether it was conscious or subconsciously, and sort of analyzed it and sort of consciously made decisions that would benefit your family and the people around you, instead of saying, well, this is how it is. It's going to be real shitty, but it's just the way it has to be.
Right. And that's the when we got made the decision to get divorced, there weren't these great resources that there are today. You know, podcasts like yours who deal with it, you know, divorce podcasts, there were coaches, divorce, there weren't any, you know, there wasn't any of that. And so, like you said, when Nikki and I got divorced, my first phone call, which if you're listening and about to go through divorce, don't make this mistake. My first phone call was, after research was done, was to the best lawyer in the area we live in. Instead of eventually when I, you know, got grounded a little bit, was the second call should have been the first call, was to a therapist, you know, to deal with these feelings that I had, you know, because the lawyer just wanted to feed into those negative feelings. And, you know, luckily I we got back on track, but please, if you're listening, don't call the lawyer first, or don't call, you know, the friend who's been through a divorce to get, you know, advice. But, you know, truly, I think where Nikki and I, looking back on it, got this thing right, is we dealt with the emotional side of it, right? There are two sides of the divorce. There's the emotional, and then there's the business side of it. And you know, I could tell you, not many good outcomes are made when you're dealing, you're making decisions based off of these emotions of you know, hurt, pain, anger, resentment. Mm-hmm. All the, because you're making, not making decisions for what's best for your child. You're making decisions on how to hurt the other person.
Yeah. And you're bringing someone else in who is going to make more money from you.
Right.
And so
right.
So that your happiness is not their outcome.
And they don't love your child.
No, they want money.
Yeah.
That's their job.
Right. And at the end of the day, they walk away happy with the money. You will walk away writing a very big check and having to deal. Yes, you might get a judgment of divorce, but you'll have to deal with, you know, this. I think that's the other thing is there's an idea out there that, okay, I just got to get divorced. I just got to get the judgment. And then once you get the judgment, it's not over, especially when you have kids. Mm-hmm. You know, you deal with this person for the rest of your, you know, probably the rest of your life. And so, you know, it's just a cloud of, I forget the Peanut character, but who always walked around with the cloud, the dark cloud over him, the dust, you know, that's sort of what, you know, my parents, you know, walked around their whole life with. But the lawyers didn't. They walked away very, very happy you know, Mercedes payment and car payment or house payment made for the next couple of years.
On to the next one.
Yes. For sure.
Yeah. Really, this is really interesting. And so just before we get to the next part of the interview, I'm going to give you some sort of cool questions that I've been playing with. It's called the Proust questionnaire that I've added to as well. So where can people find your book and follow you?
It's really difficult. Everything at Our Happy Divorce, ourhappydivorce.com. Books sold on Amazon. Our publisher, Mascot Books, mascotbooks.com. There's a 2-for-1 special on there because we feel like this, if you're interested in what we have to, you know, hear our experience and our hope, that it would be great if both parties could read it. And if you don't can't afford a book or just reach out to us on social media, on Instagram at Our Happy Divorce, we will be more than happy to send you a book. We have plenty of them, believe me.
But you know, word to the wise, don't let the book be the surprise we're getting into.
Yeah, exactly. Read this.
Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't tell you how many people have told us that they were sitting and just reading it because they wanted to read it, like friends of ours and stuff, and they'd be reading it at like baseball games or something like that, and people would be like, oh no, are you guys getting a divorce? You're like, no, our friends wrote it. I'm just reading it.
Right. I guess you guys, that's interesting. I guess you have to be sort of tactful. Yeah. If you do get a 2-for-1 on how you hand it to your partner.
Yeah. You should just have a look. Yeah. Well, it's funny. When I told my wife that I was going to be, this was the subject of the next show. She was like, I said, no, it's fine.
She's like, is this research or is this for your listeners or for content? Right.
this was great. Thank you for this. So, interesting stuff next. I mean, not that that wasn't interesting, but this is also interesting. The Proust questionnaire, which is, if you've ever watched Inside the Actor Studio, James Lipton always gave a bunch of questions to round out the interview, and I've added to it and I found some other ones. Yeah. So let's start with Nikki. What is your self-sabotaging behavior?
Oh, God. My self-sabotaging behavior would probably be me telling myself that I'm going to fail at something. And I think that was one of the things that scared me the most about getting divorced is, you know, I was relatively young. I was young, a lot younger than I am now. And I think that I was so scared because I was a failing at something that I thought, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to be a single parent. Like I'm never going to be able to do this. And I think that was probably one of the worst self-sabotaging times in my life.
And what is your love language?
Oh, I'm waiting for Ben to say something. She's just a brat. She doesn't have one.
I'm biting my tongue because these are yours. I'm not taking your
God, I don't know. I mean, I'm very... I don't know.
But would you say it's acts of service, physical touch?
It's definitely acts. I would have to say it's probably a combination. It's definitely an act of service because I'm probably a bit controlling.
Probably.
And I, you know, like to
quiet.
I'm very. I like to do things for people, and I like to take care of people. But then in return, I don't necessarily like to be taken care of, but I like to feel love.
You like attention.
Yes.
So like words of affirmation.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
And what about you, Ben?
my love language?
Sure.
Or would probably be words of affirmation. I think one thing that I've learned recently, is physical, but not for a physical probably is my love language.
And what do you think your self-sabotaging behavior is?
Oh boy. There's a lot of them. You know, one of the products, but sort of the accelerant to what was already there with my parents' divorce was the gene of alcoholism and addiction that sort of, when my parents got divorced, accelerated it and self-sabotaged through drugs and alcohol for probably about the next 8 years and luckily got sober at a very young age. But getting sober or drinking and drugging are just a symptom of what the disease really is. And I think my self-sabotaging behaviors are my thoughts, and a lot of negative, thoughts of, you know, being broken. And people will only love me if they don't truly, know me. Or I don't, so I think self-sabotaging is my, dark side thoughts of a lot of negative self-image.
Interesting. And it's interesting that I asked those two questions because more often than not, when you ask those two questions together, they mirror each other. So when you say your love language is words of affirmation, so you want people to say nice things about you, your self-sabotaging behavior is saying bad things about yourself. And so it shows sort of what you could be doing to yourself instead of saying a bunch of bad things about yourself, saying I'm not worth it, I'm not good enough. Your love language you can do yourself. You say I'm good enough, I'm worth it. Yeah
And that's one thing that when I said that I hadn't learned until recently is the big lie that I've been telling myself for 40 plus years is that there never was anything wrong with me, and there's not anything wrong with me. But because of the self-sabotaging behaviors and thoughts, I convinced myself that there was something wrong with me. And you're right, through other people, getting that affirmation, but they weren't truly understanding, or I wasn't allowing them to know who I really was underneath.
Yeah. And if that's what you hear, that's what you believe.
Right.
Nikki, what's your idea of happiness?
My idea of happiness. not my child going away to college next year, I can tell you that.
The idea of getting back together with me?
No, oh, definitely shit. Not that either.
That was quick to answer. Nope.
I mean, this is going to be a really strange answer, considering, but as horrible and awful as the last couple years have been, the time I've been able to spend with my son and knowing that he's going off to college next year has been like my ideal happiness, because I will never get that time back. And I know that we've spent so much time together, and it was like time that we never, if there wasn't a pandemic going on, been able to do. Mm-hmm. So like out of something so horrible came something so beautiful.
Mm. Yeah. Ben, what about you? What's your idea of happiness?
Don't steal mine.
I mean, I think, you know, along those lines.
But I think it was the same for all of us. Like we all, the four, but six of us spent a lot of time together.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like we quarantined basically together without anybody else.
And I think that it's too easy for me personally just to blame the pandemic and for this. But, you know, I think what it did for me is sort of expose, sort of like water. You know, if you have a leak in your house, the water will, or crack in your house, the water will find its way and find mm-hmm. the weakest path. So that's sort of what the pandemic did for me. But for many years, I had made the switch to, or I felt like I'd just been surviving life and not living it. And my life was sort of on autopilot. You know, I would be driving and I would get to, I could be listening to my favorite album on the radio, and the day could be beautiful, windows down. I get to my destination and I was like, how did I get here? Right. Or what? And the album could be over and I didn't listen to
it. Like life was passing you by and you didn't know it.
Right. Just push the sort of button on cruise control and get there without having to push the brake or the pedal. So I think my idea of happiness is the ability to be present and aware and start living life and not, you know, just trying to survive it.
Yeah, I think that's a sort of a very similar answer in a sort of roundabout way, both of you. Sort of living life and spending quality time rather than thinking about the minutiae of day to day and, you know, all the reasons to leave the house, and we've got to go and do these routines and drop kids off at whatever. It's mm-hmm. it's sort of quality time with people and not worrying about all the little silly right. things that, you know.
Right. And being present. Away. I mean, you know, a perfect example is putting my kids to bed and you know, yes, I put my kids to bed, but more of just going through the motions of it and not really truly understanding what a great opportunity that is, right? Mm-hmm. What a great to just to yeah. be present and to talk to them instead of, okay, you know, it's time to close your eyes. It's time to, you know, or just go through and go through instead of just, you know, being present and being amazed of what a great, you know, moment that is.
Yeah. It's time you don't get back. So you might as well make it
exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nikki, what qualities do you value in other people?
Honesty, integrity, and let's think, what else? I mean, I just really want you to be a good human. It's not that difficult to be a good human. Mm-hmm. And I find, and you know, and I think that I've learned that. I mean, like I always thought that people were going to come out of this and be like kinder and gentler and, you know, just better people. And now it's just, I feel like I find those people that didn't learn that. Mm-hmm. Like they didn't learn how to be kinder. And I think that's one of the things that I think this whole thing taught me is just to be a kinder human.
Yeah. What about you, Ben?
I think trust You know, for me, I am emotionally challenged male who has a hard time opening up and being vulnerable. And so I like to have people around me that I feel safe being able to be vulnerable. So it's trust and safety. And you know, Nikki's a perfect example of one of those people. And, you know, I know despite everything that's happened in our marriage and our divorce and our, you know, whatever, remarriages. But
hold on, I think I should record this for myself.
It is being recorded. It'll be on, you know, it'll be up in space forever. But you know, that I can call her, and talk to her about anything without judgment. And I know that she has my back. And I don't know if there's a quality, but another thing I like to look for in people, and value is a sense of relatedness, and understanding of, you know, whether it's shared human experience or, you know, just the sense of relatedness gives me, I guess that gives me some more safety, and trust in that person that they understand, you know, what I'm going through or where I've been.
Wow. That's, that's really interesting. Like the qualities you said that you value in other people, it sounds like those are the qualities that you've instilled in, Asha and the people around you through therapy and through being so open about your experiences and your journey of growing together.
Mm-hmm.
Being open, being able to talk, being honest. So it, you know, good job on that.
Thanks.
So far.
I mean, yeah.
Not to say that it works or it's like that all the time, but I think that, you know, both Nikki and I, and what we try to tell our son is life is hard. I mean, it's, you know, there's pain is mandatory in life. Mm-hmm. I mean, but I think the idea of suffering might be optional. If you're willing to grow and take an honest, look at yourself first.
Right.
And, you know, I think for me anyways, it's easier and it's still instinctual when to take a look at other people first.
Yes.
Right. And point the finger at other people first. And that's why I think, you know, divorce gets so rough sometimes is that's, you know, people's first reaction, if only, right. She shouldn't do that. If only she didn't do that. Right. But I think it starts with an internal look, an honest look, at yourself or myself and my behaviors. And so that's what we've tried to, you know, instill in Asher too.
That's great. Is there something, and it doesn't matter how menial it you could think it is, that you've been thinking about doing, but can't quite bring yourself to do?
Hmm.
Whether it's buying a novelty product or, you know, having a spa day or jumping out of a plane with a parachute.
Definitely not that. Yeah, I will say that mine is, and I can't believe you're not even going to say this for me, speaking in public.
And what stops
deathly,
you?
Deathly afraid of it. Just deathly afraid of it.
So why do you want to do it?
I don't really want to do it, but I always think about doing it. And then I was like, no, can't do it. Can't do it.
Then don't. there's avoidable stuff. And,
yeah,
you know, unless it's part of your job or something you have to do, you don't have to do it.
I try really hard not to do that.
Well, and a little side note to add on to hers, if that's right, really quick. The amazing, when we decided to write this book, you know, it was sort of, I instigated it, but there was only one way that it was going to happen is that if Nikki did it with me. Mm-hmm. It took, just like it took two to ruin our relationship, it took two of us to make what we have today. And so it took a little bit of coercing because she's not as open. She's not as forthcoming as I am. But she did it and she did great. But she's done all these, you know, sort of podcasts with me and you know, TV appearances. So she says to her, she's deathly afraid of it, but she's walked through that fear many times through this process of the book. So, you know, I'm a little proud of her.
Oh,
So what about you, Ben? And I want to rephrase it. So is this something you want to do, but you haven't quite managed to bring yourself to do it?
I want to go to Iceland and see the Northern Stars.
I'm going to go with Russell.
Northern Lights,
actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. I've been wanting to do that for a long time.
And so, there's an igloo.
Yes, and you could stay in the igloo.
The ice hotel. Yeah, I know what you mean.
The ice hotel. So that's, talk about small, bucket list items, but that just popped in my head, so I'm going with it.
So what's stopping you from booking the flights and the hotel?
That's a good, I'd like to go with my wife. she's a little bit, we have two young kids and, but it's on the bucket list and we will do it eventually. And then there's the, backlog of travel, and being able to actually book, the hotel. I did look into it 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed like it, even, for, I think it was March, it was hard to find a hotel, but I do some research. So we're halfway there.
Oh, Greece is lovely as well.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. Avoid the cruise ship destinations in the summer. It just gets crazy.
Just avoid cruise ships in general.
Yeah.
Yes. And you'll be a happier person, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to work on them for about 3 years.
Really?
Yep. Wow. I agree with you. they're going to go out of business soon anyway. So life is short. I think you should. I'm telling you to book the trip.
Okay.
So now you have to do it.
Now it's committed.
You know Russell was done.
Yeah. You should. Yeah, you got to do it. Okay. So to wrap up, if, let's say, heaven exists, you arrive at the pearly gates, what would you like God to say when you show up?
Come on in.
You're not on the list.
There's a seat waiting over there for you.
You wouldn't ask him where the VIP line
is? No, I'll just take my seat and be quiet.
I would like him to say you are on the questionable list because your imperfections and your fall downs, but you always seem to get back up and never stop trying to be better. So that's why you're in.
Love it. Well, Ben and Nikki, thank you for this.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a wonderful, wonderful conversation.
I really enjoyed it. So, once again, our happy divorce, the book, the socials.
Everything at our happy divorce, ourhappydivorce.com, our happy divorce on social media. Mm-hmm. And the book is available anywhere books are sold.
Perfect. Thanks, guys.
Thank you
very much.